You cannot take a chemical engineer and make him a data scientist and vice versa. But if they understand each other and they understand the context and they understand the challenges, you will be amazed of the innovation that they bring then to the table.
Hello, my name is Omri. I'm a general partner at NFX Bio. And today we're doing something special. We want to send out the bat signal. We want to call the tech entrepreneurs and show them that they can start a tech bio company and change the world. So with me will be Yogev Debi, founder and CEO of Mana Bio. He was my co-founder at Genome Compiler, the company we ran together. A tech guy starting in Intel, now doing his second tech bio company, and he can explain all about the transition between traditional tech and bio. So let's jump right in. So Yogev Debi, great to have you here. People don't know, but we've known each other for many years now. You've been my co-founder at Genome Compiler, the chief operating officer. So being together in the trenches for more than 5.5 years, we got it done. And what people don't know about you, and you know, I'll be happy if you start with your background, is that you started in tech. You didn't know anything about bio and you made the jump. And now we see a lot of people, a lot of tech people, they made their fortune in tech. They want to have the impact of bio coming back to bio. The kind of joke is, how do you make a small fortune in bio? You start with a big tech fortune. So maybe we'll start with that. Like, can you tell us more about your background and how did you get to this point?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, thanks for having me here. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Omri. So my background is, as Omri said, computer science, as you said. And I, after graduating, I worked at Intel Corporation. So I started as a software engineer, then became team manager, program manager, really working on real tech, you know, wireless devices. You know. And after about almost 7 years at Intel, we met. And you told us about this crazy idea of DNA, like synthetic biology and synthetic DNA, and everybody is going to synthesize DNA and edit genes, and we have to have software to edit genes. And it sounded like, you know, science fiction. At the beginning, we were talking back in 2010, which was really early days for this. I mean, it was even before CRISPR was discovered. Nobody knew what it was. So I remember coming to your lab at Stanford when you did your postdoc. And we saw that, you know, the luxurious lab at Stanford, and you're working with actual pen and paper. And, you know, we're like software engineers. This, like, sounds so bad. Like, this is how you do science. This is how you treat, how you make drugs. This is crazy. So I think that was the first step into this huge world of biology and starting to understand the differences.
Yeah, so you joined me in this crazy journey and pipetting like monkeys in the lab to making a IDE or a CAD tool for biologists. That was our company, Genome Compiler. So there you moved from, you know, being a manager at Intel to being a chief operating officer in a software company for biology. So how was that transition?
Yeah, so we started Genome Compiler on this idea of, you know, people are going to edit genes and they need software tools. And what we did is an audacious vision of, let's create, you know, .NET for DNA. So that was the idea. And I remember a few occasions where, starting with this episode at Stanford, when we saw that you guys work with pen and paper, then when we started creating the actual software, Genome Compiler, and we showed it to users, and we were in this mind that, oh, everybody's going to use it for sure. And then we presented it to lab scientists on the bench. They didn't even have computers. So that was crazy. And then the people that had computers, for me, it was an amazing opportunity to use our software skills to really change people's life on the bench. Because when we show them some simple features, which for us, it was simple application, user interface application. And for them, it was, they showed us actual booklet, physical booklets with tables and charts and diagrams, which they used to use on a daily basis. And when we show them like interactive application on our software, it was like showing a calculator to a caveman. You know, it was like mind-blowing for them. So for us, it was crazy to see that even though, you know, I didn't have any scientific background, I honestly think I'm not smart enough to be a scientist, a PhD, but it was great to know that using engineering mindset and software skills, you can actually make an impact, you know, on these people and then later on, obviously, on like impact people, impact humanity on that. So that was great. Like on the team aspect, I can say that one of the challenges that we got really early on was that we as software engineers and, you know, all the tech people, you're used to get some kind of product requirements, right, from the product people. And they say, you know, this is how it should look like, this is the problem we're tackling, just, you know, just go and do it. And then you want to figure out how to do it, what's the best way to do it. There is never a question of, can it be done? I mean, in software, like, yeah, everything can be done. It's just a matter of how long will it take, who are the people to do it, what's the most efficient thing, and what are the priorities. In biology, there is the initial way, can it be done? We didn't ask ourselves this. When we came to Omri and we asked him, you know, should the software behave like this or like that? I mean, what's really the product requirements? What should the flow be? And Omri is like, well, in biology, sometimes it works like that, sometimes it works like that. I don't really know. Nobody knows. So it was like, okay, how can we, you know, implement and develop any software application here, which we don't know the underlying requirements. So sometimes it will work, sometimes there will be bugs.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been quite a ride, right? You know, and a learning experience, right? You know, 5.5 years in the trenches, building software for bioengineers, seeing the price of synthesizing DNA going down along the way, being in all the SynBio beta conferences. It's been quite a ride. And then we were lucky enough to get acquired by Twist Biosciences, a company making DNA, where I became the head of Colder for Twist, and you stayed in Israel and led the Twist Israel, the entire group, right?
Yeah, so that was quite an adventure, and the whole, the acquisition, I mean, it was great because we felt, and you know, we talked about it a lot, we felt that we're actually joining this huge revolution, and finally, you know, we joined forces with another company that actually complements us. So that was great, and I think that one of the interesting things that happens also after the acquisition, and for sure, even before in June Compiler, was that, you know, managing people that come from these two different worlds. So on one hand, you have the, obviously, software engineers, they're writing code. So that was the competence of the team. But on the other end, you had lab scientists, so Omri yourself, but then other people as well. They have room in the team from giving requirements, talking with users, marketing, customer support, QA, you know, we hire biologists. And I think that mitigating this gap between these two worlds was something, you know, you need to really give education to the two worlds of how to speak with each other and how to accommodate the challenges, you know, of each other. Omri, you came one day, it was a few years before the acquisition, you came back and you say, you know, this new thing called CRISPR, it's going to change humanity, it's a genome editing, and it's going to be a Nobel Prize one day. And nobody knew even how to spell CRISPR. It was like, what this, like, we're, you know, we're kind of working on the trenches of the coding, you know, debugging to the middle of the night, and here comes this CEO sign, they say, hey, this CRISPR, this is going to change everything. And after a few years, it was there, like it was out there. And I remember that, you know, when trying to explain people, so when I became the general manager of Twist Israel, part of my mission was to also some kind of give, you know, pitches and talks about the new generation of genetic engineering. We called it genetic engineering 2.0 or synthetic biology. And when explaining that to tech people, and that's because, you know, my background is tech, so it was easy for me to think as a tech person, you know, biology is really different. Why is it different? Is because that software essentially is made by human, right? And, you know, we created software, so we understand it. As complex as application can be, and as complex as challenging tasks that you as a computer programmer get, eventually, you know, we understand software and we build applications and complex things on top of that. And biology or DNA, it's like the code of life. And, you know, nobody created, I mean, God created it or evolution, and there is no documentation. And now we're trying to design it. And now I'm explaining here, I'm talking to the tech people. Imagine that you have a software, underlying software code, which there is no, like usually there is program counter, runs from zero, like down, and there is one. And in biology, it's not that. You have, first you have multiple program counter, and then they're not starting at point zero. They started wherever. I mean, you can think about it as randomly. It's not random, but we don't understand. So, you know, it depends on environmental parameters like temperature and stuff like that. So really, it's really hard to understand. And then it doesn't go from zero to, you know, down. It goes both directions. So 5 to 3, 3 to 5, right? So, you know, imagine how you can design stuff on top of that. And then can you hack things like that? So this is crazy. And then come CRISPR, and CRISPR aims to change code in runtime, like while it's running in a living person. So that's so crazy. It's a real science fiction. And now I'm so happy it's coming to reality.
Yeah, it's so funny. You know, people, you know, I remember talking to my partners about Mammoth Biosciences before we decided to invest in them. And I told them, like, I don't know many things, but I know that this is going to win the Nobel Prize. And indeed, Jennifer Doudna, the co-founder of Mammoth, actually won the Nobel Prize a few years afterwards. But that was the easiest call ever. Yeah, and biology is a spaghetti code that, again, no documentation. We didn't invent it. It's the most complicated, most advanced technology on Earth. That's biology. But the impact is so humongous, like the ability to feed people, to cure people, to provide for humanity and the environment. It's just amazing using this technology. So you've been in Twist at its peak, more than $10 billion company, and then you joined Monday and helped them IPO and become a really big company. And now you decide, you know, forget that. I want to go back to biology. And you start a company called Mana Bio that I'm very grateful to be able to invest, like close the loop and be in the board. It's great. Now it's your time to suffer as a CEO. That's great. Hopefully the next $10 billion plus company. So can you tell us what make you go back to biology? And then if you can explain what Mana is doing.
Yeah, of course. After this journey, you know, I talked one day with Roy Nivo, my longtime business partner, which you know very well. And we said, you know, it all was, by the way, it was also at monday.com that time. And we said, you know what, forget it. We have to start a new company. We have two requirements. One, it has to be something impactful, and preferably in the life science business. And the other one is it has to be something with software, because we understand software. And so we tasked ourselves with finding this next challenge, and it was obvious that we're going to need another co-founder, another scientific co-founder, because we need someone from the science background. And so we went on for a few months of ideation, talking to people, right? We didn't think we're going to bring the next idea ourselves. So we talked with many people, PhD professors, MDs, people in the academia, investors, entrepreneurs. And eventually, after a few months, I think you actually introduced us to two professors from the Technion, which is the kind of the MIT of Israel. One of them, Avi Schroeder, is a chemical engineer, an expert in drug delivery, nanotechnology. And the other one is Kara Dinsky. She's a machine learning and AI expert. And both of them worked at that time, at part of the academia, on the idea of leveraging machine learning and AI in order to predict lipids and lipid nanoparticle formulations for drug delivery of gene therapy, of nucleic acid-based therapeutics. And we met together, and first we fell in love with the people, so Avi and Kara. And then we also fell in love with the idea and understood the rationale of this. For me, it's very exciting because the opportunity that we have here is that, you know, for the past decade, I mean, people working on this CRISPR and synthetic biology, and it's clear now, well, I said before that people didn't know how to spell CRISPR. Now it's almost a household name. CRISPR, RNA, mRNA with the COVID vaccine and everything. So everybody knows that the next modality of therapeutic and vaccine is going to be based on nucleic acid therapeutics. So whether it is CRISPR, RNA, DNA, different types of RNA, right? But then apparently the bottleneck there is delivery, because it used to be the case for other drugs that delivery was kind of not a must, or you could use something generic. But now with nucleic acid therapeutics, you have to have something which is tailored to the payload, tailored to the target organ that you need to reach. So you have to have delivery. I like to think about it as if you're an astronaut, want to fix the space station. Let's say the astronaut is like the CRISPR. So you cannot just walk to the space. You need a space shuttle with oxygen, seatbelt, pass the atmosphere, land safely, etc. So this business of building space shuttles, it really needed on one hand. On the other hand, it's really hard. And when we're talking with delivery companies, they say, you know, it's really hard. As I said before, biology is not known. The underlying logic is not really known, not understood well enough. So it's really hard to come up with the new designs of new space shuttles, especially if you want to overcome great challenges like targeting different organs in the body with different types of payload, etc. So delivery companies, which they are all, you know, really smart scientists, super smart people, but they're all doing what I call real science, which is trying to make it with rational design, which is really hard because we don't know the underlying logic. So what we do and our hypothesis is let's leverage on the other end. We have currently almost on the shelf machine learning, AI, talented people that know how to develop these algorithms. So let's use that, apply that on data, on relevant data, either generate data or take existing data, and then come up with a platform to predict new delivery vehicles, so new lipids, lipid nanoparticle formulations, and then we'll be able to actually deliver these nucleic acid-based therapeutics to different organs and cell types in the body. So that's the idea. We were really lucky to have you as part of NFX leading our seed round about a year ago, and together with Lionbird, which, by the way, Lionbird also sits on this intersection of software and life science, so we're really fortunate to have you guys invested in our seed round, and today, you know, we're 1 year, like just celebrated our anniversary. We have many achievements along the way, but I think, you know, this kind of tech bio spirit is really, really part of the company right now.
So just to clarify the delivery problem, right? You know, when people think about drugs, they think about going to the pharmacy, getting a pill, popping it in their mouth with some water, and that's it. That's a delivery. It just gets into your gut and spread to the body, and it just works. But then new modalities of drugs like protein antibodies, you cannot eat them because they get degraded in your stomach. You need to, you know, get them through an IV. And then the new modalities of nucleic acids, if you try to eat them, they'll degrade. If you try to put them through an IV, the body will react negatively to them because naked DNA and RNA usually means viruses are attacking us. You know, you don't just have like random DNA and RNA in our bloodstream. So you have to cover them with something. You have to create a shuttle that will direct them to the right cell type to affect that cell type. And that's the huge problem of delivery that you're trying to solve with a combination, with a real tech bio platform company that has a combination of AI, machine learning, but also actually physically, chemically synthesizing those molecules and testing them on living things to see if it works, and then closing the loop and learning from that and, you know, creating new delivery options for patients.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the point you hit on this intersection or integration between these two types of expertise, I think that's the opportunity that we have here. Because if you look around, most of the companies, at least in the delivery space, as I said, they focus on real science and it's really hard. And that's why they told me, you know, we don't understand the logic. So it's like based on gut feeling or intuition. You know, that's the way people do drugs. I mean, it's not scalable. So they tell me this is why it takes so much time and so much money to do it. And so our hypothesis is to really shrink the time it takes to find the, let's say, clinical candidate in like weeks instead of years. So that's our vision. And in order to do that, that's the only way I believe today to do that is the integration between these two worlds of real scientists. We still need, you know, wet lab and everything. But on the other hand, tech people with tech mindset, with tech skills that, by the way, ask naive questions. They are not biased by whatever they learn. They don't need to be unlearned of some biases on their, you know, history. And so it's really funny to see that, you know, sometimes it's really simple to make huge steps. You know, sometimes if you just make a simple script of generating numerous candidates to test and then sort them in some way will save a few days of work for a chemist, for example. So we see this on a daily basis where the software engineers come and sit actually in the lab. This is very important to, you know, integrate the people. So the software engineers, they come and sit in the lab. They see the mundane work. And, you know, the number one thing that mostly bothers us, like tech people or software people, is that if when you see, you know, manual work happens more than one, even one is bad. But if something mundane happens more than one, it's like it hurts. You know, we cannot tolerate it. So immediately you think about automation. You know, it's a human nature to be lazy. So tech people, they take laziness to the next level, which is, hey, we have to make automation. And when I say automation, it's really simple. It's software automation. No robotics. You know, you don't have to have it always. So in software, it's really simple. So you automate things, you make scripts, and you make life much more simpler. So the scientists, they have now time and they have their minds free to think about these problems and challenges. So when we combine these two worlds, we get a really like 1 + 1 = 4 and plus.
So the main reason I want to talk to you today is because we go to academia and we see amazing IP. We see just this most incredible science that can really change the world and make huge impact in people's life. But the kind of culture we have in biology is not very entrepreneurial, and people are missing the founder, the entrepreneur that can take it out of the lab and run with it. And we see a lot of people that got trained in entrepreneurship, in technology, and they would like to do something with impact, and they would like to have the impact of bio, but they're not sure that they can do it. So somebody who's doing it, you don't have biological background, you have a software background, and it's now your second tech bio company. Like, what translates well, what works, and where do you need help? Like, how can we make more people in tech come and start companies in bio?
Yeah, so that's a very good point. So first, the gap between the two worlds is real. I mean, there is gap. I think that a result of what we described before, that software people, since the underlying technology is known and computers react really fast, so everything is really rapidly. I mean, you get feedback on the spot, so you can improve your software, you can get results. And once you change a bit in the software, you can, on the same day, you can see results from the market. It's amazing. I mean, think about if you could develop a drug and see the reaction of the market after a week. Like, it's mind-blowing, right? And in bio, it's not the case, obviously. Even leaving regulation aside, it's not the case because it's really hard. Science is really hard. But I think that in tech, what was developed in the past, the many years that tech exists, is this culture of first, everything is possible. And then a result from that is that many cultures evolved on the basis of not on like doing curiosity-driven science, but on doing like R&D, which is just how you make things most efficient, the best user experience, the best value for money, R&D, etc. So you have a lot of good concepts which results in impactful work and prioritize work and focus work. And I think when you take these into the scientific world, I mean, you cannot make a scientist, just give you a work estimate, like it will be 2 days and it will be 2 days because he doesn't know, because everything is curiosity. But you can still push the boundaries and you can ask questions which will lead to better answers in terms of the management, the self-management of the person, like how you manage yourself, how you want to measure yourself, how you want to spend resources. So if we talk about tech, since everything is so rapid and fast, there is a huge competition, but you have great rewards and you have many people working on that, and there is a lot of capital. So in many cultures, the culture is kind of spend money and don't waste time. Just let's save time and spend more money and get results faster. I feel sometimes in science, in bio, people are working from the opposite way of let's save money and on the expense of time. And so even though it is still like real science or not.
You know why? The main reason is, you do most of the science in academia, and in academia you don't have money, and the workforce, the PhDs are for free. So they don't care.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that then in the bio, the culture evolves much because of the academia. I mean, many people that work in bio companies, they grew up in the academia. It doesn't happen in tech. In tech, you finish your degree after, 3 years. Most people don't really do PhD or even master's. You don't really need that in order to be super effective and, get well compensated in the tech companies. So after 3 years in academia, which is totally just undergrad, right? You are out for industry and you make all your career in industry. So you learn at the big companies, small companies, startups, but it's all business oriented. And in science, you spend a few good years in academia on research, even before you work in a company. So this is kind of, so it makes your cult self, the DNA and the culture as in academia. So things like, we know it takes time. It's really hard even to evaluate people's performance because, you're making an experiment and then you get the results after 6 months. In tech, after 6 months, you already fired him six times. Like it's hired, great people in 6 months. So the turnaround time from idea to results is something which is meaningful. Anyway, it makes tech people to be thinking in a process oriented, which is like very structured, very process oriented, like very structured. And they all also invented all these mechanisms because the problem with tech is not like the problem in science, right? The problem with tech is how to do it most efficiently. It's not like, as I said, not like whether it is possible. So we invented, tech people, they invented mechanisms of how to make sure that we work in a focused, most impactful way. So, tools like everyone knows, right? Agile development, the sprints and daily stand-ups and all of those tools that make sure that the team works most efficiently and the results come in the best way, etc. So when we at Mana, for example, apply that, it's funny. In the beginning, it was funny. Like the scientists, they didn't even understand it. why do we need daily stand-up? I mean, every day it's the same update, right? We're still working on it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're still working on it. But then Roy, which, you know, he is an amazing person, amazing leader, amazing executor. And he said, no, I mean, guys, you need to update. What's your plan for today? Even though, and it is okay, you know, not to reach, I mean, yeah, you defined the goal and you didn't reach it because 1, 2, 3. Still, you have to report it out. You have to say, what are you going to achieve today? Even though this task, I don't know, synthesize this molecule, whatever. Yeah, it's a 3 days walk, but break it down into days and define what you need to do today. So task breakdown, better planning, you know, better focus. These are all concepts which they were evolved and got matured in the tech, but they certainly have place in the bio, in the scientific world as well. I mean, we see it every day.
This is so important what you're saying here, because I think, again, we're trying to get more tech founders to come to bio. And, you know, their reaction is like, what do we know about bio? And then my answer usually to them and to my partners when they want to evaluate a bio company is 80% of a company is the same no matter what the company is doing. It's sales and marketing and management and support and all of that. And then if you're in a tech bio company and you understand the tech side, you know the tech side, you know the 10% of the tech side. And then you just need a very strong bio partner to complement you. And you can be a CEO, you can be a COO, you can be CTO of a tech bio company, even if you don't have a background in bio. At least that's my experience. Does that fit well with your experience?
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, it's kind of, you're hesitated in the beginning because you're not like, I feel that I will not be the one that comes with the scientific innovation, right? It will not come from me. This will come from the science, it's from the scientists, and there is a gap. I mean, obviously you don't understand the material, right? The way I think about it and to mitigate it is first, you know, ask questions, be humble, you know, don't assume that you know things. And I think in the beginning, you know, in the tech days, back in the days, it was like the senior people were kind of, they thought they were the smartest. It's not like that anymore. So for a long time already, even in the tech, people are humble. They're not like the smartest people in the room. So I think that we're used to not be the smartest people in the room. So you need the humbleness of, you know, even like sometimes it's even hard. So think about code review, okay, in the tech, like when you develop software, there is always the manager is doing code review, we understand, etc. And here we cannot really do code review, scientific review for the scientists. We can still ask questions and learn every day. I think, you know, this is the most important thing is to get the right resources to learn. Now, I don't mean learn because you need to replace the scientist and be a scientist yourself, but learn in order to understand the language so you can understand better when they describe you a problem or whatnot, how you can best help. And I think you're absolutely right on the getting the right partner, which has the scientific, you know, skill. It could be a partner. It could be just, you know, the people in the team that each one is an expert in his field. So what you really need to do is to find the people that can help you vet and screen the right people for the company. Because I could not hire, I mean, the lead chemist in our team. What do I understand with chemistry, you know? So we need to have the scientific co-founder for that to vet and say, you know, this is the number one person in Israel. So, okay, so, you know, no brainer. Like, I just need to do some kind of an HR interview for him. That's it, right? So I think that's a huge lever. And it helps in the tech world, you know, the network is important. So here it's important even more because the network will really help you bridging this gap of the actual knowledge. And I also agree that most companies are similar in the same of, you know, the fact that I know to run boards and talk with investors and tell, you know, the stories and stuff. I mean, yeah, I had a huge ramp up to do in the scientific world. And, you know, I think that at some point, by the way, sometimes I feel in discussions that it comes to my favor, the fact that I'm not a scientist, because it's like, okay, you know, I'm not a scientist, but they appreciate the fact that I know enough to handle the conversation. So, one, I don't get too hard questions from, you know, a potential BD opportunities and stuff. And second, the conversation is different because they appreciate, you know, my position on different base of skills and, you know, and achievement. So I think there is even an advantage being a tech co-founder or tech CEO working on bio company.
So a lot of the audience of the NFX podcast are tech entrepreneurs or just general tech people. In your experience, what do they need to learn to become a tech bio founders?
So number one is a hunger to learn. Like every day, use every opportunity, whether it is the online courses or mentors or just people from the team. I love learning from people from in the team, because for me, it feels that I learn from the best resources because they're the best. And also, it's kind of part of the culture of the company. You know, it's like, I don't know something, I ask. So it's role modeling for them, is that it's okay to ask and there are no stupid questions. So ask the people, lever them. And then I think specifically between tech and bio is that we need to appreciate that, you know, the fundamental thing is so different. I mean, things in biology, it's not deterministic the way we are used to. So this is why everything collapsed from there. You know, it's not known. Experiments take forever. It's not because the people are slow or lazy. It's because sometimes it is the nature. So we need to develop the patience for that and also to be mind of this situation. So learn from other people, is it okay or not? Because if I would run a tech company, then I can assess our performance, right? Because I know if something should take that amount of time or not. I know whether the people are good or not. In bio, I don't have this. So I need to trust some network. I need to trust my other people, etc. So it's a different paradigm. That's what I like to say. It's not only a different kind of programming language or a different operating system. It's a totally different world that we're entering into. It. And one of the things that I'll say, two more things. One, for tech people, especially I would say for CTOs or CEOs, which are more kind of technical, we love the mind challenge. We love challenges, right? And we look for engineering problems and we want to solve them with most advanced and sometimes it results in complicated solutions. In biology, in bio companies, I think sometimes, bear in mind that sometimes simple is enough. Sometimes when you produce a simple solution in the software mindset, it will be a jump for the bio aspect in terms of a solution. Because sometimes a simple script or simple spreadsheet generation or something like that will solve days or weeks of work. So don't jump into the too complicated solutions because everything else is complicated enough. I mean, now we have a problem in the lab that something is not work and it's like a voodoo. In software, we say voodoo. Well, there are no real voodoos, but when we don't understand, we say there is a voodoo. In biology, there are a lot of voodoos. Every day there are voodoos. I mean, you order a chemical from a different vendor, you expect it to be the same, suddenly it's not the same, right? I mean, we know it. You put it next to the window, there is some reaction with the sun. So it's not deterministic, and we need to make sure things are as simple as possible.
Well, I think it is deterministic, just very complicated and dimensional.
Okay, yeah.
But it is deterministic. So you talked a lot about learning, but what would you say would be the one advice you give somebody from a tech background who is interested in tech bio?
So I would say two things. One, you're fortunate to find a way to really, you know, use your skills, background, experience, etc., on something which is so purposeful. So, you know, keep that in mind. Be proud of what you do, and this is amazing. Like me, I said I'm not smart enough to be a scientist and PhD, so I'm really grateful that I can contribute my skills to do this bump in the world. This is great. I think that the number two, I will aim the CEO or the leaders that are going to start the company or to lead the company, which is from these two world, is it's essential and important proactively working on bridging the gap between the two types of people. Because if you have a tech bio team, it means by nature that you have people which are on one hand software engineers or coming from the tech background. On the other hand, you have people right from the lab, the scientists, bench scientists, etc. These two groups of people, they are so different. I mean, so my advice is put a proactive effort on bridging the gap by educating, by bringing people sit in the lab, taking lab people, putting them in the office, you know, with the perks and everything. Because these two groups, they have to speak in the same language. And I think the main gap, the basic gap is language. And people need to understand themselves. People need to understand each other. They need to understand the challenges and the perspective and the different backgrounds from each other. And when doing that, you're not only, you know, smoothing the environment in the office and making a better teamwork and like make it easy. This is your opportunity to really make the teams suddenly create real new innovations, because that's the real diversity that you have. I mean, think about it. It's not a disadvantage. It's an advantage to have this kind of a multidisciplinary team. So take the advantage, educate the team, make sure that people really start, I mean, you cannot take a chemical engineer and make him a data scientist and vice versa. But if they understand each other and they understand the context and they understand the challenges, you will be amazed of the innovation that they bring then to the table. It's amazing. I love to see it every day. I see it, and software engineers starting talking with chemistry, you know, when we used to laugh at the genome compiler, some words that you brought up and we didn't understand the words and we laughed about them. But, you know, eventually you see this collaboration between the team members. This is amazing. That would be my number one advice, is to take it all the way. Don't try to separate. People try to separate the groups. Don't do it.
That's a great advice, how to bridge the gap, because again, the gap exists, but bridging it actually can create a lot of interesting synergies and new innovation. So one thing that I really admire about Mana that came from your background in tech is how fast you move. You move really fast, and people are amazed at how fast you got the result and how fast you're actually improving your results. So what other mindsets and skills can people bring from tech to tech bio companies?
Yeah, when I think about it, and you know, it's a good point that we are moving fast. And I think it's also a combination coming from the tech industry, which is mostly like industry focused and business driven and need to get results fast, etc. And competitive environment. And also, you know, being experienced. Let's not forget that. I mean, it's not the first time it happens for us. So when Roy and I were in this ideation phase, looking for the next challenge, and before we started Mana, we actually did a nice exercise. We said, you know what, we already know from our tech experience and experience in entrepreneurship, we know how the company should behave in terms of culture. Like, we don't know what we're going to work on. We don't know what the purpose is. But other than, you know, we know that we want to work on life science and software, we know how the company works in terms of values. And we sat down and actually written the values for the company, which were impact, ownership, quality, and teamwork. So impact is like, you know, make sure that you have an impact. Everything that you do have to be impactful for the company towards the goal, etc. And ownership also is like something which is, hey, you know, this is the way for us to move fast, because it's not that me, like myself or Roy, we need to make every decision in the company. I think that this is very important, because we knew we are going to enter into something that we don't know enough. And we have to have people that have this kind of sense of ownership. Like, they know, like the chemists, the chemical engineers in the company, they know that they have to make decisions every day. And they have to make these decisions in light of the goal, in light of the purpose of what we want to achieve. But they have to own their issues. And obviously, you know, it's under the context that we give them and, you know, budget, they know, like, the limits, etc. But it's very important. And the same for quality and trust, you know, like people have to work in high performance, etc. And teamwork, which is obvious. So for us, you know, I think that being so much time in the industry, you know, amazing companies, Intel, Genome Compiler, Twist, Monday.com, I mean, great companies, and we learned a lot. And in the tech industry, again, since it's so competitive and so fast, I think, you know, in the tech, as a result of the fundamental of how it works, it became competitive. I mean, you develop software so fast and you get feedback so fast that it's in your nature. So we get sick when things go slow. And by slow, I don't mean like, okay, sometimes things take time, you know, it takes time to calibrate a new robot that just arrived in the lab, you know, it takes time. People need to come, you know, it's okay. But what makes us sick is when people are not focused. And this is for us, like, it gives me, like, it itches me. It's like, oh, no, you're working on the wrong thing. Oh, my God. So we train people. We don't whip them like, this is what you should do. On the contrary, we train people to test themselves whether they are focused. So whenever somebody is not focused, I start with myself, and it's my problem because I didn't communicate the focus well enough. So this is the first step, to make sure the focus is communicated, the goal is communicated. Everybody in the company, by the way, they know almost everything. Like, everything is transparent, aside of, you know, salaries and cap table. But people know where we stand in terms of business development, in terms of the plan, in terms of even in fundraising. I mean, they know, you know, not all the bits and bytes, because just a lot of data, but they know where we are. They know we're raising money, etc. So people are kind of part of the headache that the leadership have, right? So they're part of that. It gives them motivation. And it also makes sure that they are focused and they know. And by the way, they also come with great ideas. And sometimes, you know, they bring ideas which, you know, are great and for sure better than my ideas. And I love it. I just love it. When people come with new idea based on the context of the company, based on the goal that I defined, and they come with something which I didn't think of, wow, it makes my day. It makes my day, because that's scalability.
That's great when you have this culture of transparency.
Yeah, so transparency really makes the team, again, they're motivated and they know what the problem is. It used to be the case what was expected from people to bring the solutions, right? Like it used to be in the early days, like the manager was saying, you know, this is the problem, this is the solution, go and execute, right? And then there was the revolution and people say, like manager saying, this is the problem, find solution. Great. But I'm saying, you know, this is the goal, go find the problems. Like go find what would not work. And that's a real, I believe, you know, and Roy and I believe, and Avi and Kira, like this is the real scalability. And this is the real leverage that we have from the people. Because everybody in the team, especially, you know, in the startup, especially in this early stage, but even later stage. And by the way, it doesn't matter in this case. It doesn't matter whether it is a scientist or software engineers, bio or tech. It's this sense of, hey, you know what? This is the goal. The problem is like, go find the problems. I mean, you're the chemist. So you know what the challenges are of synthesizing these molecules. You're the formulation guy. You know what the problems, you know what equipment to order. So I should trust your judgment, right? So I think that transparency is something that we learned in the industry. It's now becoming more and more wide in the tech industry, transparent, impact, all of those. I think that these values should be applied in the culture of the companies. I have to say that, you know, the bio people in the team, they are sometimes shocked. I mean, they're not used to this kind of culture. In the beginning, they were not used to it. Like it was a shock for them. And we trained them and they saw role model and they saw that we are good with getting feedback from them. And now it's working great. And I think this is something which every tech bio entrepreneur should implement.
Great. So hopefully we already persuaded the tech founders in our audience that they can become a tech bio founder themselves. But then the question I'm sure they're asking themselves is, you know, how do we start? How do we find the right science? How do we even know the science is interesting or real breakthrough, right? You know, how can we evaluate the business? It's a new business for us. So as a tech person studying in bio, yeah, I can do it. But how do I know that this is the right approach and this is the right breakthrough technology?
Yeah, it's tricky, of course. So what we did, for example, we talked with a bunch of professors, we talked with CTOs, and it was hard to evaluate. I mean, we couldn't evaluate ourselves for sure. At some point, you have to have the network to kind of screen it. And I think that what worked really well for us was that, you know, with you guys and the other potential investors and just throw on them the ideas and saw the reaction. So in some way, we leveraged the combined knowledge and combined experience of people that see these kind of crazy ideas every day, which is the bio investor, the biotech investors, or the tech bio investors even better. And then you guys already did the market research, right? You saw many companies in the space and you can give some intuition whether at least the market is there. So obviously the team is on us and then there is the technology part and the market part. Right. So team, technology and market. Market, you can do market research, but we use the smarter people or more experienced people to tell us, yeah, the market is huge. And then technology, that was the important part to kind of understand whether it is going to work or not. So that's the DD that we did together with our co-founders. And that's what the people should really do is I would recommend, you know, talk with people, talk with the people that offer this idea, talk with potential investors. If you're already experienced or tech entrepreneur getting into bio, it means that you have some network. Most of your network are probably tech related, but hopefully you have some people that have some bio skills. And if not, Omri is here. you should talk with Omri and other investors. And so I think that this is the technology DD that you should do. And then on the team, you need to trust your co-founder. So I would say that one important aspect for that is whenever you hit an idea, which is driven by some, let's say, PhD or postdoc or professor in academia or whatnot, make sure like what's the availability of this person. Is he going to join you full time? Is he going to join you as a scientific co-founder? Is he not going to join you at all and he just want to out-license you the IP? I think that's a very important part of the puzzle. I wouldn't start Mana on my own, like with Roy alone. We had to have both Avi and Kira involved. They are still involved very much. They're not full-time in the company. They're not on the payroll, but we made sure that they're involved and they care about this. And so, you know, that's the ramp up that you have to do.
Great. So you heard it first, tech founders. you know, you made your big fortune in tech, you want to make your small fortune in bio, and more importantly, you want to have real impact in curing, feeding, providing for humanity, just using the most advanced technology on earth, which is bio, to solve some big problems. You can do it. You know, your Gev did it, and he's doing it right now with Mana, and you can do it too. And I encourage you to start, and don't hesitate to contact us if you have this crazy idea and you want us to vet it, or other tech bio investors. But definitely you can do it, and we encourage you to do it. We see too many bright minds going to optimize ads. There are huge issues that can be solved with biology. Yeah, you can really help feed people, cure horrible diseases, and we encourage you to do it. You can do it. So thank you so much, Yogev, for, you know, showing people that it can be done, and being my partner for so long, and especially in this new company that I'm sure would be amazing. And hopefully this discussion will help encourage more tech founders to come to TechBio and help change the world. Thank you very much.